got that nerd rage. Nerd rage. I got that nerd rage. Nerd rage.
From comics and games to movies and TV, this is the Nerd Show on 1310 KFKA.
Nerd rage. Nerd rage.
Now here are the nerds.
Happy Nerds Day, everybody. You're listening to The Nerd Show on 103.1 and 1310 KFKA here in the Allo Communications Studios in downtown Greeley. We've got Scott, Micah, and myself, Nick, who are gonna get nerdy with you. We're also known as...
Darth Monger.
Darth Ambivalous.
Darth Harmonic.
It never gets old.
It doesn't.
Darth Harmonic.
It's actually my favorite.
It
actually,
is.
No, this is my favorite.
Darthus Pincus.
That's still so good.
It is. Good stuff.
Yeah.
Been quite a week in pop culture and nerddom and everything else. Been,
yeah.
Little emotional.
Little emotional.
Yeah.
Lots of emotions.
Lots of emotions. Some more than others.
I don't have those.
I don't know, Mike. Are you?
You indicated before we came on tonight that you had some emotions about at least the show we're going to talk about first, which is The Last of Us.
That is true.
So you have emotions.
First of all, I was the last of us to watch it because I was up late watching it.
Oh, I watched it this morning. I did not.
Oh, then you're the last of us.
I was. That show is growing on me so much. I mean, I'm excited to. It's just like. I enjoy these weekly releases.
Yeah.
I get frustrated by them, but, because I want more. Especially I wanted more Joel and Ellie, but I thought this was such a fantastic episode to show what's happened over time that's not in the perspective of the two other flashbacks that we've had. Wow. It's just a stunning performance.
By Nick Offerman.
Oh, gosh, yeah. I mean, just both of them. It was captivating. It was poignant. It was powerful. It was just really poetic. I used that word talking to Micah before the show.
Yeah.
And the parallel, I'm going to go with more P words.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that I found very intriguing, I'm not going to use the word interesting because sometimes that's like, oh, that you didn't really like it. No, I loved it. Was really intriguing is that this story deviates significantly from the game.
It does.
And that in the game, we never meet Frank.
Mm-hmm. And Bill's alive.
Yeah, Bill is alive. And we've heard about him, i.e. Frank, in the video game, but you never see him. And so being able to see that story and to understand what took place and how that happened and for that relationship to start and develop and expand and grow, I just thought was really well done for a series like this because you do have the time to do that. You can... make a character more interesting. You can do more character development.
Give them a soul.
Give them, yeah. We talked about that before the show, that it gives the show a soul. And it really pulls on your heartstrings with Ellie and with Joel now moving forward. Because Joel's got like this secondary purpose that he's being reinforced every week. Last week, Tess did it to him. This week, Bill did it to him. And so he is like just keeps getting hit over the head with, you need to take care of this girl. You need to get her where she needs to go.
Well, he kind of doesn't want to do that because I think he's been burned out. He lost his daughter, and I think that kind of killed him. But now, after this episode, he realizes, yeah, he doesn't want to know much about her because he's still upset about his daughter.
Yeah.
But he does have this purpose, and it has been hammered into his head.
Well, the opening was phenomenal. I had to remind myself.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, it's kind of somber. Oh, he's just building the Karen, out of the stones. And if you don't know what a Karen is, it's not the person you want to film who's flipping out on some fast food employees, but rather stones stacked up on each other to indicate safe passage. And then, he built that, right after Tess's death. And then tossed Tess's food to Ellie. And it was powerful that Ellie really did stand up for herself. And I thought that was really good of her to do so. It's like, hey, I know you didn't ask for this. This wasn't part of the plan. But don't take it out on me.
Mm-hmm.
And I appreciate Joel reacting so well to that and Yeah, she's absolutely right.
Well, and then we get into, and it kind of gets lost in the story because it's such a great story about Bill and Frank. You forget about the element at the beginning when they're at the convenience store and she finds the infected. Mm-hmm. And you see Ellie's character continue to develop.
She's crazy.
She's got a lot of screws not quite tightened down, and the almost like a masochist kind of mindset when she's sitting there looking at the infected and she cuts its head open and it's just looking at it like, and then just stabs it like, and then pops back up. Hey, I found eye drops. I'm good.
Yeah, she's slightly reminiscent of that girl from The Walking Dead who
was feeding the walkers.
Was feeding the walkers, eventually killed her sister because she's like, oh, we'll become walkers. A little crazy like that, only I think more in touch with reality. But yeah, this girl's kind of effed up.
Well, and you wonder what kind of life she's had. And we're going to get some more backstories from her friend. I don't remember her name, but who used to play the arcade games at the mall in the quarantine zone. So I'm curious about that storyline and that story arc. But she's odd. And she's fascinated by, I mean, that was tragic, just seeing the graveyard, essentially, the bones. Just, you know, what Micah was saying before the show, you know, I'm glad they didn't show the military assassinating all the civilians.
Agreed.
From the town. It was so inferred perfectly.
Yes.
From the cut scene of that baby blanket and the
dress. Her dress,
woman,
her
dress, was wearing, like, and then to that cutscene, to where they're helping him load their luggage. I mean, that is sadistic to me, of giving these people false hope. And but Joel was
were
right.
They giving them false hope at that time? I mean, maybe they did not know. I'm giving the military the benefit of the doubt, but maybe the military didn't know at the time that those cities were full.
Now, when did
maybe
that happen?
Maybe at
that
some point they got
the
report.
QZ,
September 30th was when they were loading the people up, the civilians.
Yeah.
But this happened on the 26th, right? Was that the 26th where the infection started?
No, I think it was. Maybe it was. Yeah, because it was like on a.
It was
a Thursday into a Friday. And so it could have been, and we'd have to go back and look at it. But I think Mike is onto something. We are not being given the whole story. So there's an opportunity for us to feel sympathetic to the military having to do what they do, just like we did, you know, at the very first episode you've got that guy and he's like, yes, I've got them. They seem to be fine. They say they're not infected. And then all of a sudden he gets the orders that now he's got to do something. And he's like apologizing. I am so sorry. I'm sorry. And so it's building on that a little bit, that maybe they didn't know. Maybe they were trying to help, thinking, we're going to get you to the QZ, you'll be fine.
And they knew that they had that, quote, Order 66.
Yeah.
They didn't want to use Order 66, but they were maybe hoping.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's always that possibility. But I like the idea that it was not told to us how that goes, because we all get to fill in those gaps. We get to go, the military at that time didn't know. They were doing the best they could, or they were sadistic and they knew it the moment that they were loading those people on the truck that they were going to take them out of town and shoot them. Mm-hmm. But we just don't know that. And
I don't think
it gives us all that opportunity to kind of fill in the gaps until we know more.
I don't think you could call it sadistic. I think you could call it like they were being practical. Like, this is what they had to do. They had to take these people, put them in a certain place, and then do it.
I just can't imagine.
And they were doing it for the good of the survivors, but God, what an awful thing that I don't think I could do. I don't think you guys could do. I'd rather be one of the people that died, because I couldn't do that to
civilians. It was,
not children.
Oh gosh, yeah, and the baby. I mean, that's just heartbreaking. And I am glad they didn't show it.
Yeah.
Because HBO can get pretty gory in some of their shows. And I mean, look at how Pedro Pascal's character died in Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
So I'm glad, like with The Walking Dead, they show a lot of gore, but they don't cuss a lot in that arrangement they made with AMC. This is great storytelling without unnecessary gore and violence.
So far.
Yeah.
Yeah, we might see more of it as we get on into the series, but it's been I'm like you. I get done with the episode. I wish there was another one to watch. And I watch the previews and the making of. I want to know all of this. It's been great.
Yeah. Well, stay tuned. We probably have another segment. We'll talk about this and Bill and Frank and what that means for Joel and Ellie moving forward. Stay tuned for more of The Nerd Show. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Nerd Show. Nick, Scott, and Micah chatting about The Last of Us, the latest TV series adapted from the video game on HBO Max.
Wow. Great stuff.
When I watched the post-credit scenes this week, they said, and I like this, and I hope people who've played the video game, when they're deviating from the story, were able to tune into this, but they go, you know what? We're not really intending to deviate from the story, but if it makes it better,
yeah,
we will. And I think the convenience store, that was not in the original game, but we get to see Ellie. Ooh, that's she's fascinated by this death, by these creatures. She's fascinated by this world that she's – airplanes. And, you know, I love that line of when they see that crashed airplane. It's like, middle seat, $12 sandwich. But she goes, but you were in the sky.
Yeah.
Something that she'll probably never experience.
Never get to do.
She's never been in a car.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was
when he says, put on your seatbelt, and she looks at him like, what? What are you talking about? And I thought that was interesting as well. She's
things
like, she has no clue.
Take for granted.
You just assume. Yeah.
Well, I it was a great episode. It was a little over an hour long.
This is an episode that has a soul in it. It's something that The Walking Dead failed to do consistently. This episode had a soul in it, and it is very sad. It is very heartbreaking, but it is such a good episode. And if The Last of Us continues to do episodes like this, I will continue to watch religiously.
Let's pivot to Bill and Frank. And, you know, Bill's this
and
isolated
excellent adventure
man.
Survivalist. I want to say. I love how that comes up. What are they? You a prepper? And he's like, survivalist.
Mm-hmm.
I like how he said that.
Nick Offerman portrayed that character wonderfully, and I never played the game, but I think he plays this roles, this conservative libertarian type of guy from his roles in Parks and Rec, but you know, in real life he is a woodworker, he's an artist, he is passionate. I mean, I remember some news stories he's done or some interviews of just how emotional he is and how much he feels. And you get that sense. I mean, he just played that character fantastically, hiding in his little bunker.
Yep.
Just to go off of the emotion part, what was great about this character is normally, like, you'd expect this character to be a one-dimensional, I hate the government, I prepare, blah, 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 everybody who disagrees with me is blah, blah, blah. He's not. This guy is emotional. This guy has been alone for so long, not just for so long in this world, but probably his entire life.
Well, after his mom died, he was a closeted homosexual.
And he,
I can't imagine, you know, his views and then how he would fit into this world where he never felt a part of and coming across those feelings.
Yeah.
And, he's been watching the world on those monitors and those screens for years, and then he comes across Frank. And, I mean, you see how as the world's changed, devolved into chaos, this character Frank brought love, brought purpose to
Bill. And he says that. He said, I didn't have a purpose until I met you. And he goes, and now I know that you are my purpose. And if you go, then my purpose is over. It's been done. It's been served. I have fulfilled my purpose, whatever that is. And it was really touching. And I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves because there's a lot to discuss in what we see in the episode. But it was really touching. And it was one of those where you could, you know, Micah, you said soul. I could see myself in that type of situation doing the exact same thing.
Absolutely. I was talking to Micah before the show, and I loved the drastic difference. You have Frank, this delicate character who can't lie, who, you know, watching enough of The Walking Dead, you're like, is he going to shoot him? Is he going to shoot him? Of course, if I'd played the games, I know he didn't. But and then dinner or lunch, is he going to kill him after this?
Yeah.
Oh, he's having a shower. Interesting. But then he plays the piano, and his rendition of that Linda Ronstadt
song, yeah,
was very aggressive, very clunky on the piano, and you could just see Bill's character almost get offended by that. No, stop. And then just how passionate and poignant he was playing the piano and singing the lyrics. It had a complete, I mean, you saw his soul of who he really is deep down. Those are the kindness in the eyes that Frank saw, and just that spark, that connection. It was a powerful scene.
Yeah.
And then I love the flash forwards. You know, you advance 3 years and they're having a little lover's spat, you know, which I thought was, what's a day-to-day like when there's nobody
else
to run?
Yeah.
There's no doctor's appointments to go to. There's no work to be done to, you know, checking the perimeter, to taking care of flowers and plants and gardens. But you still have fights. You still have, you know, we can skip furniture. We're going to have friends.
Yeah, we are not going to have friends.
And he invites friends.
Yeah. And just, that was something Bill never would have done. Mm-hmm. And again, that shows the development of the character, that Frank drew things out of Bill that he never would have done on his own. And you even, you know, towards the end when they're reading the letter, he's like, yeah, I didn't really like you, but you're the closest thing to a friend that I've ever had. So
well, I love on the envelope to anyone, but probably Joel.
I mean, yeah, he kind of figured it out. That was how that was going to flesh out. And it did. So,
well,
it was great.
Joel's seen the world. And for as much as Bill is a survivalist, he was right. You don't know. Yeah, you're in a good location. You're not getting a lot of strays. You're not getting hordes of zombies like would come across and destroy, you know, the Walking Dead's habitats or communities, but the threats were raiders, and he did a great job proving. But you know, when he got shot, it's like, oh my gosh, is he gonna die? He just got shot. It's this chaos. But you know, Joel said, hey, that fence isn't gonna last, so let's work together. We can do this together. And then what I loved most, I think, was, well, when you think he's going to die, call Joel, because he knew that Frank couldn't survive on his own. And I love the little radio signals. We find that little Easter egg on what the decades mean.
Yep.
And I thought that was pretty fantastic that it was Frank. And that was used by the Fireflies, but they weren't Fireflies. You know?
Yeah.
So Tess must have taken that back to the Fireflies.
Must have.
But isn't it interesting how Joel, when they're having that lunch outside, did not refer to Tess as his girlfriend.
No.
As my mine.
Mm-hmm.
That was, I don't know. What are you guys' thoughts on?
I think that there's that sense of Joel doesn't want to get too close to anyone, including Tess. He was very close to her, romantic partner, whatever you want to call it. But he was never going to name that because he'd lost his daughter.
He'd already lost his wife before the series started.
Yeah, he's like already lost so much. He doesn't want to get to a point where he's getting too close. And that's, we all know that that's fake. We all know that that doesn't work. We draw into somebody and you're going to draw into them. And if you feel connected to them and if you love them, you're going to love them. And nothing you can do in your head to not name them something doesn't really change that. So I think that was him lying to himself, trying to make that happen. And then he's like, point that gun somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. And it was just so casual. Get that gun out of my face. It was just, extra part of that sentence.
What was your favorite part of the episode?
You know, the strawberry scene I thought was pretty fantastic. In an age of survivalism, you're not planting strawberries. That's a luxury food. And how angry Bill got. You gave him one of my guns?
Yeah, which one?
He was very fixated on that.
And then it was like, and then he apologizes.
Yeah.
Because he realizes the beauty and the opportunity that they have been presented by having that. You know, I think the last day for me was just the whole concept of Frank going, this is what we're going to do, and you're going to do it. I loved when he said that. We're going to go to the boutique. I'm going to pick out clothes for you to wear, and you're going to wear them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they do all of that. And then it was like, I knew that Bill wasn't going to allow that for them to be separated again. And I wasn't sure how he was going to do it. And I thought the way that they did it was so well, that he is fulfilling that obligation. He's doing exactly what Frank wants him to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's like, will it be enough? And he's like, absolutely. And then all of a sudden Frank realizes, wait, there's already pills in the bottle, isn't there?
That caught me off guard. That was my favorite. I hate to see it because it was so sad, but that was actually my favorite scene. I didn't know Bill was going to die. I thought Bill was going to be in the rest of the series. I've never played the game. Maybe not in the rest of the series. I thought he was going to be in more episodes. That was really sad.
It was.
And I was actually angry during the strawberry scene, because when that was going on, I'm like, oh my God, they're going to kill off Frank a la Walking Dead does. Mm-hmm. And I was talking loudly. I had to stop and rewind and play the scene over again because I was getting angry. But the way they killed off both Bill and Frank was beautiful. It was emotional. It felt just right. It had a soul to it. And this is why, so far, three episodes in, it is better than The Walking Dead in certain ways. It could always go down the dark path that The Walking Dead does.
Well, we're not going to let that happen. Well,
I hope not.
And, you know, the beauty for me is I never watched The Walking Dead. So I don't have anything to compare it to. I'm not a big zombie fan anyways, and so that never really appealed to me.
But they're a good band. I'm kidding. I just wanted to say that.
He's been waiting for weeks to say that probably. But I just think this is a really good show. You know, we talked about how The Peripheral was a really good show. We've talked about these other things that these studios have done a really good job of making good stories. Mm-hmm. And it can be pop culture related. It cannot be. But there's great opportunities to do really good stuff with this. And I think we're seeing the fruits of the labor that are paying off. And I'm really happy about it.
Well, the passing of Bill and Frank, I'm glad they didn't show the bodies. And for them to pan out the window open, that is not the dark shadows that Bill had always lived in. It was open and free. That was simply stunning.
Well done. Yeah.
Excellent show this week. We might talk a little bit, if we have time later on in the show, about what Ellie might do with that gun she found. But for now, stay tuned for more Nerd Show. We'll be right back. Here in the Allo Communications studios, you've got the nerds talking about the Nerd Show. About nerd shows. On the Nerd Show.
We're this talking about show. Shows that are nerdy.
Nerdy
on
shows.
The Nerd Show. Yeah, I'm like, wait, what are you doing?
You're listening to the Nerd Show.
I'm 103.1 and 1310 KFK from the Allo Communications studios.
There we go. We got
Nick, Sagat, Micah.
That's
Bad
how it's
batch.
Done. Bad Batch. Oh, gosh. Do we have a countdown for Mando, by the way? It's like 29 days away.
Is it really?
Yeah. I think it airs on March 1st.
So we're going to have Bad Batch, Mando, Picard, The Last of Us, and at one point, maybe Ant-Man? No, Ant-Man comes out before that.
In 3 weeks.
Okay, so Ant-Man's coming out before that.
Yeah, it's the 17th, I believe.
So The Last of Us is going to have 9 episodes. Mando will probably have 10. And Bad Batch, maybe anywhere between 12 and 16.
I think it has a 15.
With the Bad Batch, though, luckily those are such short episodes, we could almost get by going, two episodes every other week if we get so busy.
Or doing a bonus scene.
Oh, yeah, the bonus segment.
Yeah.
But, yeah, Bad Batch last week. Gosh, it's hard to go from The Last of Us to Bad Batch. Not that Bad Batch is bad in any way, just it's such a different show. I thought it was fine. I Wanda Sykes is an interesting character to play in Star Wars. I mean, it's rare you get a comedian who's that lively and
well, and also that the same in every character.
She does have a very typecast character, but we don't get a lot of humor.
She's typecast as Wanda Sykes,
or we don't get a lot of humor or upbeat characters in Star Wars, other than like a Jar Jar Binks. But this is a character we'll see more of, and may even take over Sid's position if things get kind of interesting along the way with Sid. And we got a little tease of that after last week's episode, and even more so this week. But overall, okay show.
I thought it was. I actually rather enjoyed it. So I disagree with you, and we can no longer be friends. No, I enjoyed it. It was different from all the other ones. Instead of, well, it kind of went off the rails at the end, which was kind of dumb. So what the basic part of the episode, basic thing, they were looking for some kind of jewel or treasure on some kind of hidden planet. They go to find it. They find out that it's some big monster that destroyed all of life on the planet.
It's like
and
a
then
kaiju.
They, well, yeah, they very easily defeat the kaiju.
Yeah, so this is where we get into the nerdiness of how the Nerd Show can be, is that they make reference to the Zepho, which is an ancient culture that lived hundreds of thousands of years before the Jedi. And so I think what they're trying to do is they're trying to get back to some of that origin story stuff that we saw in some of the Clone Wars and the animated series.
Was that stuff that was decanonized?
No, that is still current canon. And they were actually introduced in the Jedi Fallen Order. So in the video game and in the book series, we actually find out about these, you know, this civilization, I guess is the right term. And they actually look like them. And so you can see here, I'm showing Nick, the kind of the face of this culture. And so that little, you know, not little, but the big creature that gets activated after they try and pull out the heart of the mountain and it goes off on a, you know, killing spree. There's some similarities there. So I think what they're trying to show is, okay, it was an ancient civilization and they had this ability to destroy elements. And for me, it was a little bit, you know, Indiana Jones-like, and maybe that's what they're going after, and they're trying to make it not, you know, go fight bad guys kind of stuff. But I still am having a hard time getting completely yanked in and pulled into the series. I think the one that we saw with, you know, Commander Cody and Crosshair was probably the best episode of the series by far.
By
and the
far.
Rest of these are just kind of like, you
they
know,
need to go back to who they are as people. Go back to them being people and less the side quests.
Well, I think we'll get more of that as this series goes on. And we, you know, I wonder, there's got to be more with Omega. You know, they're out there just
Omega.
Bouncing around from mission to mission. She's paid their debts off to Cid with you know, her impressive gambling skills. So, you know, but this is the story we've seen in Solo. Well, we just need to get that one big mission that will pay off all of our debts. We'll go over time. But that's not what the Bad Batch is, all of them. You know, they want to protect Omega, but who is it? Is it Echo? Wants to do more to fight the Empire. And you're going to have a division there of where they're going to go. And still, who, is anyone looking for Omega anymore? Or are they still, you know, you have the Empire that's refusing to acknowledge that they're alive?
You know, I'm actually starting to think that Echo is going to be the one that is going to convince all of the Bad Batch to go and take on a little bit more. I was thinking about the whole concept of them splitting up again and doing other things. I actually think he's going to be this quote unquote voice of reason with the rest of them. And he's got experience of what the Separatists did to him and how they manipulated him and used him and saying the Empire's not any better because they were kind of two sides of the same coin. So I think we need to do more. And I think he's going to get the rest of them to fall in line. What I'm thinking is it sets up as the possibility for them to join back up with Crosshair at some point in time, simply because they are recognizing that they're all fighting against something that is nothing of what they originally thought it was going to be. And Crosshair is going to get maybe disillusioned, or he's going to stay completely committed to the Empire and he's going to be all in. But I think it at least sets up that option.
Good well, soldiers follow orders.
I'm going to build off of your theory. I've been noticing lately that Hunter is less and less there, and he's less and less useful. He's just kind of just sort of said stuff. He hasn't really done anything.
What's his superpower again?
Nothing.
He can track.
Yes.
So if you remember,
he can,
you know,
throw
he can,
knives.
He can, you know, track anybody anywhere. You know, he's kind of like the guy in Predator, if you remember. You know, he could, you know.
Well, and he's the leader. I mean, you don't want who's the Wrecker leading? He's
no.
He's got a couple screws loose, just like Ellie does in the last of us.
I mean, they make up a good squad, and so yeah, he's kind of the leader of that squad. And Crosshair would have been like the number two in that regard. So yeah.
So, I think with him becoming more and more useless, I think they're going to have one episode that really feeds into him and his character. Then they're going to kill him off. That's going to bring everybody together. And then Ectoplasm is going to bring everybody back together. They're gonna run into Crosshairs, and eventually Omega is going to have to be the leader of the team. So she's going to have to grow up quickly. But I think that's going to start happening once they kill off Hunter. And that's kind of what I got halfway through this episode when I saw Hunter going, I don't know about this. I don't know about this. He was whining the entire time.
And that's Micah's view.
And there's
I think it's going to happen.
It's certainly possible. I don't see how that is any more, unrealistic or flawed than any other option that we currently have out there.
I can't see them killing off a character just because it's Disney in a cartoon. They might, because this is definitely one of the I mean, look at the Rebels. Rebels killed off Kanan.
What did they do for Abel?
Boy. Where's the mute button? I don't know about that one.
I don't know about that one.
No good.
It is no good.
Oh, it's. I don't know. It's a good watch. It's a good Star Wars interlude between the live action series that we've had out. So we'll just stay tuned to the Nerd Show to continue getting our takes and updates on everything nerdy. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more of the Nerd Show after this break. You're listening to The Nerd Show on 103.1 and 1310 KFKA, Northern Colorado's voices in the room tonight.
Yeah.
Three of us.
Picard's back.
Picard, almost back.
Almost back, February 16th.
February 16th, the day before Ant-Man and
that
drops. So yeah, lots of stuff. And there's more Next Generation characters back.
I actually
pretty much all of them.
Yeah. Look forward to that one. I remember I never watched much of Star Trek, but when I did, it was never really intentional. It was what my dad was watching, but it was
because your dad's a good person.
He is mostly the Next Generation, so
I'm really
familiar
good
with a lot of these characters.
Yeah, I was like, oh, I recognize that person. I recognize that person. I recognize that character.
I always had a crush on Seven of Nine.
I think every male in your age group or even some slightly older and younger did.
Mm-hmm.
I always had a crush on Dr. Crusher.
Yeah.
And that's actually true. I did have a crush on Dr. Crusher. I know she's way out of my age range, but I did. As a kid, I liked Dr. Crusher.
Hmm. Crusher!
Yes. So that was...
New trailer came out.
Yeah, the trailer came out.
Sunday night.
It feels like sort of... For me, I'm going to say this, and I don't want anybody to hate me, but it's like a geriatric version of Next Generation. Everybody got really old, and we're going to bring them back for one last mission. And, the funniest part of that whole trailer is when they're sitting there talking to the one guy, he goes, it's not going to be like your normal things. It's not like, shooting and, space battles and crash landings and all the other stuff. And, of course, they're flashing to all of those elements as we're seeing that happen.
Jinx.
And they're having that conversation. Yeah, exactly. It's like, oh.
Well, I can tell you that guy's probably going to die.
It was a good trailer. I was pleased.
Yeah.
And I was excited. And I asked Micah, do I have to watch the first two seasons to understand what's going on? Or can I just kind of pick this up and enjoy it?
You should definitely skip season two.
Okay.
Because I'm not going to watch it again.
Yeah.
I'll watch the first two episodes and then the last episode so I can see that incredible acting between John DeLancey and Patrick Stewart, but I'm not going to watch the rest of it, especially the episodes where they ruin Guinan.
I've always enjoyed Patrick Stewart just so much. You know what was weird is there are a lot of Jean-Lucs being thrown out in that trailer. Did they call him Jean-Luc in the show, or did they call
him
Captain?
They called him Captain.
So why do you think it's different this time that everyone
and
their mothers...
Well, he's retired and so,
yeah,
he's friends with them now. I mean, even in the final, like, the final episode, a couple of them were calling him Jean-Luc.
Yeah.
Jean-Luc.
Yeah, he's, yeah.
So you
out
have
of retirement to do this, and yeah,
you have so many Easter eggs. You have once again in this this trailer, you have Lore, who was in the last trailer. He's now in this trailer, and also in the last trailer, you have Moriarty, who is in this trailer. So if you guys don't ever watch The Next Generation, the Moriarty character was a character. He was on the holodeck, and Geordi accidentally made him more powerful, smarter than any other character. And he figured out how to take over the ship. He became alive and took over the ship. And he was in two episodes. My theory is that they are going to end up going to Moriarty and try to help them with the ultimate evil bad guy who is, what is her name? I can't remember her name, but like she's flying around in this really awesome ship attacking the Federation, and somehow the Federation is going to be once again brought to his knees, and they're going to once again blow up Starfleet headquarters, which is, I don't know why they keep doing that. We've done that in the movies. Starfleet's always in danger. I don't know. Last season, I wish we would have done the Borg in the final season.
Yeah.
Because that would have been better to deal with the entire, you know, the original cast other than Tasha Yar. Like, that would have been better to deal with. I don't know how we're going to make this villain even bigger than the Borg. They keep saying this is the biggest, baddest villain ever, and I don't know. There were a couple parts in the trailer. There was one where it looked like a couple characters were being taken over.
Yeah.
Or maybe it was when they were going through that space cloud. Maybe they were having like a seizure or something. I'm not sure. I'm not fully sure what's going on. I certainly hope I'm right about Moriarty. He's still upset at the crew, and he has a right to be because they tricked him. Because they couldn't figure out how to free him.
Trickery.
Yeah.
Little skullduggery, would you say?
Yeah, skullduggery. Yeah, he has every right to be skulldudged, or whatever that word means.
I think I can now die a happy man because I've been able to say skullduggery on the radio. What else in life is there? There's no other peak higher than that.
Skullduggery. Yeah.
And now we've all said it in the same episode. That's phenomenal. Even better. So,
but, wonderful.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I agree with Micah. The first season was good. The second season was just kind of a throwaway waste. I did not appreciate most of it. I felt like it was sophomoric. And again, it kind of goes back to some of the stuff, you know, I did end up seeing Avatar 2 recently, and I didn't like that for the same reason that I didn't really like the second season of Picard. It's like, we always got to go back and make the humans the bad guy, and we always got to go back and make them go, yeah, they're so idiotic, they're going to keep doing the same thing over and over again. And so
I don't mind them making the humans the bad guy, because a lot of times in Star Trek, Star Trek is about preaching against the evils of today, but a lot of times by making humans the bad guys. Unfortunately, a lot of times they either make it too on the nose, or especially nowadays, they make it about one group of people, and you need to speak to everybody.
My only argument is, why is it that apparently the human being is the only species in the known galaxy that does that? So if you think about it, why is it that in all of these shows, again, in Star Trek, we had to go back to the 90s because we you know, this one little choice.
Budget.
That they, you know, but we do that, and then we're doing the same thing. I mean, that's what they did in Avatar. It's like, hey, the humans didn't learn their lesson, so we're going to redo the movie again, this time in water, and we're going to bring in all the same characters and the same problems, including the guy that we killed in the last movie as a regenerated clone who's part of the Na'vi. It just, I get frustrated when that becomes the context for every, you know, space movie, sci-fi film, and everything else. I like the idea of there being something else out there in the universe that could be as bad, if not worse, than the human condition, which always tries to muck things up. So why don't we find somebody else that mucks it up even worse, and let's all rally around somebody else who's better at strategy than we are, and we can come alongside and do something. But that just doesn't happen.
And one last thing we should talk about. The Borg.
Yes.
Our Borg queen from last season.
Anne Wershing.
Has passed away.
Yeah, Anne Wershing passed
just last Sunday from cancer. She got married in 2009, and she has left three sons.
Yeah, she was the Borg queen during the season two of Picard, and was also an actress in a few other shows. She passed away over the weekend, and we just got news of that this week. So that was sad and unfortunate, and it was poignant because we're talking about Picard, and she was probably the best actor element of season two because of the way that we saw that, and she played a character that normally we always see, you know, we must assimilate you and everything else, and she had this grander plan and grander vision, but ultimately she was trying to save the universe from something that was going to be even worse than them, and they were coming together. So,
It's really sad to see her go, especially at the age of 45 with three young sons. But you know, her first role, by the way, was in Enterprise, Star Trek Enterprise, season 1, episode 20. So if anyone has Paramount Plus, you can go back and take a watch.
Gosh. Well, sorry to all the Star Trek fans, all of her fans, and especially to her family, and it's losing a good person. So, dang. Well, this has been this week's rendition of The Nerd Show. I'm out next week. I'm going to be in Japan. So
we're going to have a special guest next week, and we're going to talk about Pokemon cards.
Sweet.
Amongst other things in the shows.
Well, I'll see y'all in 2 weeks. Have a great show next week. You've been listening to The Nerd Show. Y'all stay nerdy.